Hey, thanks a lot for listening to this program, Chris Fabry Live. I want to let you know that in the program, you're going to hear music that we've had to edit out for copyright reasons and restrictions. We cannot play those songs for you, so thank you for understanding. Have you ever heard anyone's life story or their family story and you thought, got to make a film about that? That'd make a really good movie, all the things they've been through. Well, they've done that for David and Helen and their kids because the story is just too good to keep under wraps. And the movie actually opened on Friday, this past Friday, and some of you may have seen it. Today at the Radio Backyard Fence, the movie fence, it's the story of the Smallbone family. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about and who I'm talking about. Others don't. So let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of the musical group For King and Country? You ever heard of Rebecca St. James? You'll hear how all of those names come together in the film Unsung Hero. Today on Chris Fabry Live, welcome to our continuing conversation. Let's get started by thanking Ryan McConaughey doing all things technical. Trish is our producer. Anthony will be answering your calls today. Real quickly, April's almost over, so I only have today and tomorrow to encourage you to reach out and support this program with a gift. 2 days left to receive a classic, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. This hardback, beautifully illustrated book takes you through this beloved poem from the Psalms penned by David, who knew what it was like to take care of sheep. And he put his life experience into that psalm to show how much the shepherd cares, understands, and wants to rescue any wayward sheep. I saw this yesterday, the word tablelands. This is high country where the shepherds take their lambs to eat. And I thought, that word tablelands, isn't there a hymn that has that word in it? Tablelands. Give a gift of any size. I want to send you this book, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. Go to chrisfabrylive.org, become a friend or a partner with us. chrisfabrylive.org, or you can call the number 866-95-FABRY. Then I found it. Lord, lift me up and help me stand by faith on heaven's table land, higher ground. Now you know the rest of the story. And thanks for your support of Chris Fabry Live. I cried twice while I watched Unsung Hero. There were two spots that really touched a nerve inside. Not every film does that to me. Unsung Hero released on Friday, and the story is about the Smallbone family, and the two real-life participants in that story are with us here in the first half of the program, David and Helen Smallbone. David is an artist, manager, former record label executive, former musician, caretaker of about 200 farm animals. We got to talk about that. He and Helen have 7 children, 3 of which are Grammy Award-winning artists, Rebecca St. James and For King and Country, Joel and Luke. He continues to manage For King and Country. Helen Smallbone wrote the book Behind the Lights, The Extraordinary Adventure of a Mum and Her Family, and is co-founder of Mum Life, a ministry of mothers uplifting mothers, co-host of the Mum Life Community Podcast. They live just outside of Nashville, and they're here today. David and Helen, welcome to the program. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much for having us, Chris. We're doing good. Yeah, well, we're actually having a couple of days off after the release weekend.
And you've encouraged us today, Chris, because there's only one other guy I know who's had 9 children, and his name is Jeff Sheets, and he did movies for a while as well, if you can believe that. But we are lovers of children. Children have been such a wonderful gift, and when you mentioned earlier that you'd had 9, I thought, well, you know, you understand the wonder that children are, and you just that comment so encouraged me and said a lot to me about who you are. And I know that we met many years ago, but we didn't have a lot of time then. I think we met during Rebecca's career.
Yes.
When she didn't have babies. She's now got 3, and you've got a good memory, buddy.
I remember you standing at the back. You were just kind of in the background. I didn't even know that you were with Rebecca and you introduced yourself. And I got, and I thought, this here's somebody who's got a story, and you do, and now it's on film. So did either of you go to any of the theaters over the weekend and watch how people responded, or are you too busy to do that now?
Well, we did go Friday night. Was it Friday night, Dahl, or Thursday night?
Release night, Friday night. It was actually our 49th wedding anniversary when the movie was released. Total coincidence, none of our planning at all. And we did some theatres in Murfreesboro. I think they had 8 theatres that were showing Unsung Hero on Friday night, and so we were going to each one.
But we, interestingly enough, it's been a pretty big weekend for us, and we'd done interviews during the day on Friday. Then we went to those 8 theatres, but we didn't stay to see the end result. Now, we have been to other theatres, and Helen, I've seen it a lot of times because I went out on a tour with the King Country last Christmas, and that was, you know, I have to tell you, very inspirational to me, because out of my brokenness, which, you know, that was what shows up on the movie, was a broken season for me. Whenever I see it, I'm reminded that God is good. Mm. And what people have told us after seeing it, they have committed to get more serious about Jesus and to take their families more seriously. So the end result, you know, it's a surprise for us. We had nothing to do with putting the movie together. It was Luke who presents Compassion every night on For King Country's concert tour, who talks about our family history. He went to a movie producer in LA about 4 years ago and said, hey, this story really resonates. Would you consider supporting this movie? He said, yes, we'll give you a budget of $6 million to record it. And the rest of is history. We filmed it about 20 months ago, and it was released on Friday. Pretty crazy experience, I need to tell you. And you've been around a few of those. You've been in radio for a while. But yeah, it's I just love it that the story is sharing a message of hope.
You know what got me the most is how honest it seemed to be. And I don't know the specifics of your story, but to give carte blanche to say, okay, show what it was really like. So let me ask you this, Helen, what is the hardest part of that to watch and remember for you?
Probably the hardest part is actually when David's getting rejected, when the opportunities, doors continue to close for him. He actually lost we did come over for a job, and he lost the job 2 months after we got here. There's in the scene where he can't get out of bed, there's actually multiple disappointments. In the movie, it shows the death of his dad and then the Word Record thing falling over. They sort of happened separately in our life. And so the double whammy wasn't quite there for us. But there were times, particularly when the Word Record deal fell over, that he couldn't get out of bed. And when he lost the job that we had come for, you know, we'd had other disappointments back in Australia. But when he lost that job, we're now on the other side of the world with no family, no friends, not even familiar culture, not the things that, you know, are familiar around us. And that made it extremely hard. So for me, probably the hardest scene to watch is when he can't get out of bed, yes. You know, and she's struggling to know how to encourage him to actually get up and face life. And that happened, I think, for both of us after that Word Record deal fell over. It happened, but only for a shorter period of time, I think only a day. And God was very good at encouraging us. You know, when some big thing happened like that, that was such a disappointment, something would happen within 24 hours or so, that we knew God was still with us. We knew knew where we were at, and that it was something that would encourage us.
And Chris, I just got a thought on that. You know, there is a poetic license in the movie, but the essence is true. But talking about disappointments, the hardest disappointment probably of my life was prior to that, the Easter the previous year when we were still in Australia, and I'd been offered a job by Carmen, and he had sent over the airfares and everything, and we were ready to come. We pulled the kids out of school, and his manager at the time called me up and said, we don't want you to come anymore. And that actually was the darkest weekend of my life. And I said to Helen, we've just got to get away. We're living in Brisbane at the time. So we went up to a coastal holiday town. And even to this day, you know, coming to America for whatever reason wasn't as tough as what that was. Hmm. But with God's wonderful sense of humor, his encouragement, that weekend, which still to this day is the darkest weekend of my life, our youngest daughter was conceived that weekend, and she's brought a lot of joy to our life. And I look back at that time and I think, you know, the good Lord was encouraging Helen and I to hold on even when things were looking pretty dark.
Yes. And I think that's what this film is going to do to somebody. And even the conversation here today, if you are at the end of your rope, if you have seen a lot of your dreams die, if you are hanging on and you can't hang on anymore, I want you to listen to David and Helen Smallbone, whose story is told in the film Unsung Hero. It's in theaters today. We're going to have one of their children join us in about a half an hour, but I want you to hear more from David and Helen. Find out more about them and the film at chrisfabrylive.org. David and Helen Smallbone are with us at the back fence today. You can find out more about them and the new film, Unsung Hero. If you haven't seen it, it released on Friday on their 49th wedding anniversary. Can you believe that? And if you go to chrisfabrylive.org, click through today's information, you'll see more about them and about the film. I mentioned early that there were two spots that really, really moved me, that really touched me. And both of them kind of caught me off guard. And one of them, Helen, I want you to respond to this because you are pictured in the film at this place where you've moved to America. You've gone into a house that doesn't have any furniture. It's not what you'd signed up for. Mm-hmm. And you go to church, you sit down in church, and someone reads Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. And I looked at that. It's like, I've been there. I've been in that. I've experienced that same thing. Did that really happen to you, Helen?
No, it's probably more the script writer's contribution there. But I do know that when we are sort of pushed to the end of our tether in a way, that God does speak to us. Like, he does use either the Bible, he uses his still small voice in our spirit, or he uses a word from somebody else or to encourage us on the journey, because our journeys have hard times, our journeys have good times. And in those hard times, we need to be reminded to just continue to trust, to continue to look to him, and to, I say it now, it's looking for the hand of God each day and seeing where he's leading you, how he's speaking to you, and just be encouraged that he sees and he knows and that he's with you on your journey.
There's a scene, the other one that got to me, there was a scene where people come around you and this is, you're not expecting this, and they give and they give and they're generous. And there is conflict inside of that, David, because you want to do this yourself. You know, you want to be able to provide, and you see this, you're grateful for the help, but at the same time, you can't help but push back on that. Talk about that.
The movie portrays me as a little bit more pessimistic than I really am. It portrays Helen to be optimistic. I do remember a time when I was mowing someone's lawn, and they were up on their patio of this really nice house in Franklin, and I think the mower stopped or it ran out of fuel or something. And I remember it being a very humbling moment. But, you know, I think it was all for my good, because my overview of what happened on the movie is that I had been given a wonderful life and married a wonderful woman. I was 42 at the time. We'd come to America, had been married for 17 years, had terrific parents. And I had to be humbled. And I think I was. And I look back now and I think I was put through all of this to grow me and for me to see the hands and feet of Jesus. Because what I think happens in a lot of us parents' lives, we spoil the children, and I think I was probably spoiled by my parents, so there's never an opportunity for God to move. And so I was put all through this stuff to see the hands and feet of Jesus and to move from being a lukewarm Christian to passionate. It's interesting that you identify with that scene, because the other person who identified with that scene, we went up a few months ago, the producer and I went up to Oklahoma City and played the movie for Steve Green and David Green, who run Hobby Lobby. And after it was all over, we had a bit of a Q&A, and David Green, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but David Green made the comment, he said, "Hey, I identified with that scene," because evidently when he was younger and he was broke at the time, I think things were going a bit tough, he had a similar experience to what was evidenced in the movie.
Chris, I wanted to comment on that, because that scene where everything comes together, those were more individual happenings. You know, they weren't all on the same day. But there was a time after we lost the word agreement, we were expecting to get $10,000, and that did not happen. And the character in the movie who is Jed was a real-life character called John Moore, and he and Luann really came alongside us. They gave us the car. They gave us the Christmas tree. He paid for Libby to be born in the hospital. There were things that he had, you know, already done to support us. But after we lost that Word Record deal, and David had been pretty down because he knew that he'd been looking forward to that as sort of some relief from this financial pressure.
To get us out of poverty.
And John said, "I want to give you the 10 grand." And that was when David was really pushed. And he said, "No, I can't accept the 10 grand. Like, you've done too much for us already. I can't accept anything more from you." He went away and thought about it, and John put extra pressure on him about giving him the 10 grand. And David came back and said, "I'll let you give me the 10 grand, but I've got to give you something back." And so he gave him back 50% of Rebecca's publishing. Rebecca at that point was not signed. Rebecca at that point had not even written a song. So it was giving him back 50% of Rebecca's publishing meant nothing. Yes. But it was something that David felt he could do that hopefully might be worth something in the future. It's an interesting portrayal of how God works in such mysterious and incredible ways.
Yes.
Because John Moore at that time was at the height of his career. He was a songwriter for Sandy Patty and Steve Green, and he was at the height of his career. He gave us that 10 grand, he not knowing that in about 4 years later, I made him up here a bit less than that, but he ended up, and his wife and family ended up going to the Ukraine as missionaries. And over the next 10 years, when Rebecca did get signed and she did start writing music, he was supported by that agreement with David, because he got between, I don't know, $250,000 to $350,000 that came back to him, and that's what helped support him while he was a missionary in the Ukraine. And those are some of the miracles that couldn't be shown in the movie, but that were just mind-blowing, how God orchestrates steps and stairs in our stories that just, I don't know, can only be him.
Yeah. And a wonderful example of God's economy, really.
And Lucas Black does, and he's one of my favorites, but he does such a great job. I have no idea if he knows how to play piano or not, but it doesn't matter. Because he just, he embodied that. You know, you just love this guy with his Southern accent, you know, that comes alongside you two. Was there other than the depression then, David, it seems to me like that depression came for you as a result of this kind of striving and wanting to succeed and not seeing it, you know, in Australia and coming here and doing. And so then when you get knocked down and you stand back up and you get knocked down again, the depression just kind of overwhelmed you. Is that fair to say?
It might be a better question for Helen. I think the real story in all that is I did survive, and I was shaking my boots. I was unsure of what the future could bring. You know, I just we had our seventh child a few months after we arrived here, but my saving grace was, you know, we kind of saw a miracle a week, and then Helen's a very straight shooter. You know, she's a I'm pretty outspoken. She's probably more of an introvert, but in those 2 years, she supported me, was never negative. And I think that's a message to women who might have a husband going through a hard time. Be careful what you say, because had Helen been negative to me, I think I would have had a nervous breakdown, because my mum had a nervous breakdown at exactly the same time. And what was fascinating, the second year we were in America, her mum, who was a wonderful lady, but loved her daughter, her only daughter, and loved the grandkids, she would call up every month crying on the telephone, and that shows up in the movie, saying, it's time to come home. And Helen, under that pressure, and you know how, you know a bit about family pressure, under that pressure, she never faltered. And the crazy thing is, we go through the hardest time of our life, and it made our marriage stronger. You know, sometimes people go through hard times and, you know, marriages get weaker. And I think it was we had to bond together, because we had no family to rely on. When we arrived here, we hardly knew anybody. We didn't have any friends. So the other thought is, I remember Helen, we had a public school just down the road, about a quarter of a mile down the road. I automatically thought, okay, we'll put our kids into the public school. No, Helen said, no, I'm going to keep the kids at home and homeschool them, because she needed the support of the family. But what that ended up doing, after Rebecca started her career, because we homeschooled, we were able to travel the world together, and all my sons learned their skill set by being Rebecca's crew. And so now you've got my five boys all working in different levels of Christian media and doing a pretty good job because they what they learned. And so it's another reminder of God working in mysterious ways.
Yeah. And that it came out.
I was going to say on this that subject, I was going to say on the subject of David being overwhelmed, that the time that we lost that, the word of agreement, Gosselaar Tim Grant, was definitely a time when he just was totally overwhelmed, like couldn't get out of bed. Yeah. The second time that really blew us was when David's father died. And in the movie, those two incidents are happening pretty close together. In real life, they were probably about a year, maybe 6 months to a year apart. But that was another time when he really was just felt so inadequate and helpless as a son, being on the other side of the world, away from his family. feeling like I can't go home. We had immigration issues. We couldn't afford it. And just felt so alone and felt so overwhelmed that he couldn't even say goodbye to his father, couldn't even bury his father. And that was another time that he really got to a little bit at the end of his tether. And it really wasn't until his mum died a couple of years ago and he was able to go home and he was able to say goodbye. He was able to be with his family as through that process that he actually grieved both his mum and his dad. So unresolved grief in our lives can be actually a huge emotional, just being overwhelmed.
Challenge.
Just hearing your story is just amazing to me how much they were able to get in that film. Unsung hero, David and Helen Smallbone are the main characters in this film. And you're going to hear from one of their children coming up straight ahead. Rebecca's going to join us. This is For King and Country, Unsung Hero. Find out more at chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. We're talking about Unsung Hero today, the new film that tells the story of the Smallbone family in theaters now. Before we get to another important member of that family, I can't resist this. There are unsung heroes at work right now with CareNet. Every day, they turn their hearts toward those who are facing an unplanned pregnancy, and they counsel, they give options, they give education, they give tangible support and a big dose of hope to those who are considering abortion. And they want others to come alongside them to help rescue the babies, yes, but also support the women and the men who are in that situation. If you click the green CareNet button at the website, chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see a resource titled Making Life Disciples. Does your church have a ministry like this, like CareNet, to those in your congregation and in your community? Do you want to put feet to your pro-life commitment? Click the green CareNet button today at chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. She is a Grammy-winning singer, songwriter, best-selling author, speaker, actress, wife, mom. Rebecca St. James rocketed into the global spotlight following the release of the 4Front Records debut, self-titled, in 1994. Wow, that's 30 years ago, wasn't it? She has earned multiple Dove Awards, 9 number one Christian radio singles, 2 gold-certified recordings. Following a hiatus from recording and touring, during which she married and started her family, Rebecca returned to the stage in 2018 to perform with her brothers, Joel and Luke, better known as For King and Country, co-wrote several of the songs on their Burn the Ships album. She's the host of the podcast Rebecca St. James Friends and Family. Rebecca, how you doing today?
Hello, Chris. Great to be back with you, friend. I'm doing good.
Kiralee Berger, I think, is the young lady's name who plays you in the film.
Yes.
I thought she could have been your little sister.
I know.
Isn't that great? Isn't
100%,
she
right?
great? Yeah.
Oh, she did incredible. She kind of embodied me, and especially at the very end. Did you see the whole film yet, or
Oh,
did you
yeah.
just
Yes.
get to see pieces of it?
Yes, I
At the
saw it.
very end, the final scene of the movie, the festival scene where she walks off the bus, I mean, it literally looks exactly like me. I was there that day watching her, do the final scene of the movie from across the stage, just crying with mom standing behind me going, "How many times did we pray before going out on stage, mom?" And like have this exact same moment. It was just really beautiful.
She didn't do her singing, did she? That's not
She
her, is it?
did.
She did?
Actually, she did. Isn't that amazing? Yeah,
Well,
she's a great vocalist.
because what I thought was she's got the same, and not she's not mimicking you, but she has the same tonal quality that you have. It was the same ethos of your music. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, she did work, I know, with somebody that was helping her kind of like bring that out of her own voice. And I mean, she's doing her own music now too. And she's just fabulous. She was just the right person for that right moment in time. And I'm really proud of her. She does feel like a little sister that's just ended my life just recently. It's amazing.
I've had a really good time with your mom and dad. I knew I would. And I wish I had more time to talk about the alpacas that they have and the donkeys and
Oh,
everything.
yes. Lots of animals. It's a lot going on at their farm.
As you watched the film, what was the hardest part for you to see?
you know, I it is very vulnerable. It's very authentic how it's portrayed, you know. It's very true to our story. I think as I watch the movie, and I've watched it about 5 times now, like I cry every time, you know, it's very emotional. But I think it very, very aptly, very well portrays the challenges of being a young person in any form of entertainment or arts or media. You know, you're up there, you're vulnerable, and you feel a bit exposed. And I think all of that kind of played in the movie. But then for me, the redemption part of that is the family coming around me. But then also just the hope in Jesus that gave me strength. I mean, praying before everything I did, you know, was my lifeline. I did my first tour at 13 and went full-time at 16, and it solidified my relationship with God, Chris, in a way that I'm so thankful for, because I knew I needed him. I knew my desperation for him, and I had to lean on him. And so I'm so thankful for the fruit that it produced in my life.
There is a sense in the film, and maybe this is just creating the tension that you need in a film. There is a sense, though, that your dad was pushing you, was you know, helping you become technically precise with the way you presented yourself and going through that in front of the record labels and all of that. But also in the behind the scenes at the house, you know, it was that. Did you feel pressure from dad at that point to, I got to get this?
I mean, I think he was definitely trying to encourage me to be like the best version of myself when it came to performance and on stage that I could be, because at that point he'd crafted, you know, the work of many artists, including his own brother in a band back in Australia. And then, you know, he'd managed a lot. He'd worked with a lot of artists. So he'd seen a lot, he'd had his own record label. He had a lot to draw from. And I knew that even at that real young age. You know, that scene of me practicing with, I mean, it was a kitchen utensil. I think in real life, it was a hairbrush. I actually did hold something in my hand to pretend, you know, to have a microphone in my hand. You know, it is challenging. I mean, to be very frank, to kind of relate in that way, manager daughter, and, you know, to want to live up to a father's expectations. I think all of us do, you know, growing up, want to live up to our parents' expectations. I think there's a childlike desire to please. And so then, you know, you add that dynamic of trying to please in a rehearsal and, you know, riding the waves of the feedback. It is challenging, but
the pressure that comes with that too. Did you and the other kids, did you know the depths of the struggle that your parents were going through financially and everything else?
They were honest with us that we had, you know, dollars to our name and that we didn't know, you know, where meals were going to come from or like enough money to survive. Like, and we had a furnitureless house, you know, and we didn't have a car for a while. So we did know the reality of it enough to like pray for it, sit on the floor and pray for furniture and a car and all the things. And I'm really proud of my parents for being that upfront with us about how dire our need was, because when we saw God do the miracles and we saw groceries dropped on our doorstep and furniture at the house, you know, truckloads showing up and dollars, I mean, checks come in the mail that would cover bills by dollars. Like, I mean, it was a true miracle because we'd seen the need. And so I, as a parent of three now, cannot believe their strength in kind of admitting to that. Like, that had to be really difficult, but I'm thankful they did. We didn't feel fear, Chris. We didn't feel like, oh my goodness, what is going to happen? We could be out in the street. It was an adventure. The movie shows that. And we really did feel that it was an adventure, and God had us. He was going to take care of us.
Yeah. And the faith that they had that, that God really was going to come through, and that this was, you know, good, because there's all kinds of second guessing that you can do as a parent, as an adult, is this the right choice? Is it from everything, but you go to another, you come from Australia to the US, you go to Nashville. Did you really go on that, that train ride and see the country?
Yes. And that's a remarkable thing about the movie. I mean, it leads out with this is a true story. So it's not saying this is based on a true story. And they can authentically say that because almost every detail of the film is true. So yes, we traveled cross country from LA to Memphis on a train, an Amtrak train, over, I think, 3 or 4 days. So isn't that crazy? Like, I mean, and it makes for a lovely shot in the film, but it was true. Yeah. Even down to, there's a scene, I don't know if you remember it, Chris, where I, in the middle of the night, I'm exhausted and I put my feet up on the people, the person's legs across from me and sitting in the train. In the film, that's my dad. And he like kind of gently puts my legs down on the floor because I was just trying to get comfortable. That actually happened, Chris, on that train. Isn't that crazy?
I've been through a couple of those overnight train trips and it gets, it's a little
uncomfortable.
Yes. Unless you have a sleeping berth, you know, but if you're just trying to sit in the chair, in the cushioned chair,
I think here's the
struggle that I saw you early on trying to find your voice, trying to find who you were. Everything in the quote unquote business, even in the Christian music, you know, contemporary Christian music as it was then, was who does she sound like? Who do we make her out to be?
Yep.
And that is, being someone else is not who God wants you to be, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And I think my parents were really good about like encouraging me to break the mold. Honestly, I think they really encouraged uniqueness and not to be cookie cutter. And I remember when, you know, I was getting these comparisons. I mean, initially it was Amy Grant. I think the curly hair, starting super young, same as her, you know, doing pop music. My first album was pop. But then the next album, it was Alanis Morissette that they were trying to like compare me to. So I think everybody, you're right, at that time was trying to find, okay, who are you the mainstream version of? And I remember just kind of pushing back on that because I really did know that I was called to my own unique thing and wanted to, you know, move out into this uncharted territory of what I was meant to be uniquely before God. So my parents definitely encouraged that.
I think everybody, and I've even said this to artists who've come along, you know, this song sounds like, or your voice sounds similar to, you know, and I don't do that to compare, but it's like this touched me. I think Michael Card has talked about his early producers wanted him to be Dan Fogelberg. He wanted him to be the, you know, the Christian music Dan Fogelberg. It's like, no, I'm not Dan, Fogelberg. I'm Michael Card. I can only be Michael Card.
Yes.
So I really, on a lot of different levels, the film really worked for me. It's called Unsung Hero. It is a fantastic Mother's Day film because it lifts up moms, one of which is joining us today, Rebecca St. James. You can find out more about her and the new film at chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. I'm trying not to give anything away, but it's really hard. Unsung Hero is based on the Smallbone family from Australia, and it includes Grammy Award-winning group for King and Country, Joel and Luke Smallbone, and also the story of singer-songwriter Rebecca St. James, who in the film, you don't even know that she is a songwriter. You know she sings, you don't know that she's writing songs. But I'm not going to give any of that away because I can't. I just won't do that for you. Say a word about your little brothers, though. It must be a kick to see Joel and Luke doing what they're doing.
It really is. You know, they're good men. It's really good to see, you know, good people prospering and doing well and great things in the world. And they sure have. Oh, my goodness. And it's interesting because, you know, when I kind of quietly retired from music right after I got married, Dad had been managing me that whole time, you know, nearly 20 years. And then he moved immediately over to the boys and kind of, you know, backing them management wise. And things really took off after that. And so this family partnership is definitely very strong. The movie shows that Joel, you know, plays my dad, which is ironic and amazing right there. Luke is actually the lead singer in Striper in the film. Like, you can't even tell because he's dressed
I didn't
up.
Know
like,
that.
Did you even know that, Chris?
No. Well, I didn't know that Joel was your dad. I kept watching the film and thinking, he looks an awful lot like, how did they get the actor to do that?
Wow, you didn't know.
So I did not know it. And then after, and I figured it out, found it out, is like, this is not just, you know, a nepotistic thing where the kid plays, you know, because he gets to do it because he wants to. It's like he was the best person for that that role.
Oh yeah. No, he was really able to channel a lot of like what Dad was feeling because he knows the story so intimately. And I mean, the boys have talked about the story of us coming to America forever. I have, especially in relation to Compassion International, we've both done that, just encouraging people to be generous to kids in need. And people reached out, the church reached out to us in our time of need and covered us and helped us when we came here. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really special. And then I'm a little flight attendant in it. You probably don't blink and you'll miss me because it's right at the beginning. But I was the flight attendant and I did the voiceover work at the beginning. So there's all these little Easter eggs that are kind of fun. Every single sibling, all seven of us are in the film at some point. Like, if, you know, some of us you just see at the end when it's like the where are they now? But it's pretty special.
Well, the actors who played you guys too were just fantastic.
Excellent.
A lot of people have followed your life and your writing. And, you know, I feel like you have written to my daughters, I have five daughters, and you've written to them and to little sisters. But there was this long time in your life where you were waiting. You were waiting for the one to come along. And you and he now have three kids and you're writing something together. Is that right?
We are. We're working on a book right now, just talking about our story separately and then together, how God brought us together miraculously in LA through mutual friends and a philosophy group out there. And then how, you know, God so perfectly kept my holy hunk for me, Chris. He really did. I was waiting a long time for him. I was in my early 30s when we met and married. But I'm just so thankful. I'm thankful for having, you know, spoken about like waiting for marriage all those years and having a song called Wait for Me about it. And then God bringing that dream come true. I will never take for granted that I have a husband and children and get to do music now. I made some new music just in the last couple of years too. And get to travel with them and do it as a family because we homeschool. So it's kind of like history repeating itself a little bit, Chris, because we all traveled as a family. My family of origin, we're like the Von Trapps. And now it's like my little family goes on the road and Luke brings his family on the road for King Country. It's really sweet.
I went to YouTube today and looked up the song, You Make Everything Beautiful. And I'm not going to give away the part that plays. It's a big part in the film. And I saw all these people leaving messages. Had to come to find this song after watching their beautiful movie. What an amazing family. I just got back from the movie theater and I had to come here and listen to this song again. It was a very touching movie. And then another person says, sometimes you must get out of the way when God shows up. Took my 11-year-old grandson with me to watch Unsung Hero yesterday. He really enjoyed it. And then I watched it again today with my best friend forever, who practically cried throughout the whole thing. So that song is touching people's lives again too. What do you think about that?
It's so special and it's so redemptive and sweet for me. I made that song. I wrote it with Luke actually 13 years ago, and it was on my last album prior to having children. And it's a worship album, and that song was one of the only ones that I like just wrote from scratch for the album. But it's a song about redemption, a song about God making everything beautiful in his time. It's based on Ecclesiastes, and it really is special. It's one of those ones that every time I play it live, it hits people at the heart, and it is significant in the film. It's the song that kind of comes back throughout the film. And I think that that's one of the takeaways that people, when they walk away from the movie theater or watching it, that they'll walk with, is that God redeems our story. He's in the business of restoring and reclaiming those years that the locust has eaten, restoring those. And that's something that I think all of us need to be encouraged in, Chris, because we're living in hard times. There's a lot that we're all dealing with in life. It's stressful. It's challenging. But when we can know that God's redeeming our story and that he's faithful and he's good, I think it helps us get through those hard times and continue to trust him.
And maybe you tuned in today and you were kind of at the end. As I mentioned with your mom and dad, you know, this, when you see this story, it's not, they didn't believe in themselves. I mean, they had to have, you know, a certain amount of faith and, you know, we're going to get through this, but they really put their trust and their hope in God and what he was doing in the middle of this and hanging on to him rather than hanging on to their hope or anything else, trusting in the miracle worker. And he's certainly done that in your lives, hasn't he?
Yeah, and now, you know, in my 40s, I've seen this happen multiple times. I've seen what happened in my family when I was 14 that the movie shows and those years. And then, you know, soon after we got married, we struggled to get pregnant for a little while. I had some secondary infertility, and so we had a couple of miscarriages. And then God brought me out of that into a spring and a hopeful time. And so I've just seen him over and over redeem my pain, and I'm so thankful for how good he is.
There's real hope in him. I hope that came through today in this hour with Helen and David Smallbone, Rebecca St. James. They are part of the movie Unsung Hero. You can find it in theaters now. We have links at the website chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. Our programs are a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks a lot for listening.